This podcast is a presentation of UCTV.tv, University of California Television. Like what you learn? Help others discover UCTV podcasts by leaving a comment or rating in iTunes.
Thanks very much, and thanks to Chris for inviting me to participate in this session with such other distinguished speakers. It seems as though perhaps I'm the first one today to talk about actual open surgery rather than all the innovations in endo, but this has been a procedure that seems to be becoming more common in my practice and in our practice, and probably predictably we'll be seeing more of it. As we've been talking about this morning, endovascular aneurysm repair is clearly established as a safe and effective in the treatment of AAA disease. However, as time has gone on and people become more comfortable at it, just as we've heard even this morning, clinicians continue to push the limits of the IFU. In doing so, at times, push the limits a little bit too far. The long-term surveillance is clearly required to identify patients who have problems, especially in those that do not have standard endovascular repairs. And interestingly, reintervention has been seen still in up to about a third of the cases. But usually these reinterventions are endo fixes treatable by endovascular approach, rarely requiring open conversion. If we talk about explants, there's really two types. The early explant of aortic stent grafts, those done within 30 days, typically those are done on patients who they've really incorrectly selected to try to do AAA repair or have a major technical problem. But the late explants are what we're going to be talking about today, so-called late open conversion. The incidence is increasing, and studies have shown that patients who had been doing well even after 10 years will suddenly come back with a problem, so that it clearly shows that these patients need ongoing surveillance, essentially lifetime after endo repair. What's the cause of late open conversion? Most commonly, it is an endo leak. Endo leak often can be treated, again, percutaneously, but essentially an endo leak does imply that the AAA is untreated. This cartoon simply shows the various types of endo leak. In terms of reports of late open conversion, the proximal type 1 endo leak is the most common indication for conversion to open or repair an explant. And still, even though today there's been major improvements on the devices, there still is device separation of a type 3. Type 4 fabric porosity still does exist. And ongoing problems with endotension in cases where there is no endo leak. In terms of late open conversion, it's hard to get a handle on what the incidence is in terms of all aneurysms that are treated by EVAR, because most of the centers who are reporting late open conversion are tertiary centers. These often are aneurysms that they did not do initially, and so it's hard to get an actual handle on the incidence. But the incidence does seem to be increasing, and perhaps the risk increases over time. So patients who have known ongoing endo leaks that are following, it's probable that the risk of requiring explant may increase with time. We know clearly that when one does have to do open conversion, the morbidity and mortality is significantly higher when compared to elective open repair. And compiled data on mortality of all types for late open conversion probably approaches greater than 20%. So again, what is the cause of EVAR failure that would lead to the requirement of open conversion? Again, endo leak is the most common cause, and that can be migration, component separation or fracture. Also associated with it is limb thrombosis. There can be aneurysm enlargement either of the neck itself or the aneurysm with or without endo leak. And then, of course, rupture and infection. Rupture and infection clearly are the two emergent problems that that carries with it the highest mortality from open conversion. Evaluation similar to aneurysm disease is CT angiogram, but often catheter angiography may be done prior to explant in an attempt to really identify what the cause of the endoleak is. There is a suggestion in the literature that not only knowing the device, but the mechanism of the failure is important in reducing the morbidity and mortality. The operative approach is, in my practice and in our practice, seems to be different for infected grafts versus those that just are aneurysms requiring explant due to enlargement. Whether it is infected or an aneurysm, this is an abdominal operation. This is an infrarenal problem, so that it does not typically require a thoracoabdominal. For the most part, do it as a transabdominal. I do it all transabdominally, either with a midline or subcostal, bilateral subcostal approach. The goal, again, from my experience, has been to be able to clamp the aorta proximal to wherever the graft is. So clearly, if there's suprarenal fixation, you likely have to be clamping supraceliac. And I would say for the most part, it probably is that this is a supraceliac clamp. Sometimes in cases that do not have suprarenal fixation, a suprarenal clamp can be obtained. But again, there have been reports of approaching this with balloon control or with clamping across the aorta where the graft occurs and then kind of releasing the clamp and pulling the graft out. I would caution against that and clearly try to get proximal control away from the stent graft. The distal control, however, is not as big a problem. It can either be done if you can clamp the external iliacs or you can control the iliac limbs or with balloons inside of the iliac limbs. Interestingly, there is a significant amount of periaortic inflammation. One would think, well, this is not an operative case. But the stent graft creates a lot of inflammation around the aorta, either due to barbs or just even the ones that do not have barbs and suprarenal fixation. And so that makes this approach quite difficult. There's a lot of inflammation around the left renal vein, again, especially if there's suprarenal fixation. Often that means the left renal vein will be divided in the process of the surgery for exposure. The ureters can be involved, and selectively we have placed ureteral catheters, although that is not the routine. In terms of the graft infection, my experience has shown that this should be approached with extra anatomic bypass and clearly complete explant. There have been reports both from Mayo and Cleveland where they are doing some where they're putting the autogenous inline repair after doing explant or even using rifampin-soaked Dacron grafts. My experience has been to go to an extra anatomic repair and then complete explant. Again, by having to do a complete explant, the proximal aorta is very diseased and inflamed and is very difficult to work with other than trying to get it closed. This is a case we did not that long ago. The patient initially had an endograft done at an outside hospital about 5 or 6 years ago, had returned there with a limb thrombosis and ultimately had a fem-fem placed. Shortly after placement of the fem-fem, ended up with abdominal pain, with a big swelling in the left side of the abdomen. As you can see, there's a massive amount of air in the sac around the graft. And this was clearly a problem. We did an AxFem-FemFem with autogenous tissue because the FemFem was also infected, and then went into the abdomen, found an aortoenteric fistula, as in the lower photo, and this is all the device removed and the aorta oversewn. If you're operating just simply for aneurysm disease, then this does not necessarily require graft removal. And in fact, the trend is to try to only go to potentially to partial graft removal if there are portions of the graft that are well incorporated. Initially, it was concerning that potentially this could lead to further problems, but the literature suggested that if either the proximal seal is good or the distal seals are good, these can be used as part of the repair. So you can either do, if you do have to do proximal device removal, how do we do it? Well, one way, clearly if there's not suprarenal fixation, is just to pull it out. I would definitely suggest that when you do these cases, have a wire cutter available. Often it's helpful to divide the graft into pieces and take one iliac limb out or take the proximal out separately and not try to work with the whole device at once. If you do have a wire cutter, you can cut the graft away from the proximal barbs as well. There is the recapturing over a 20cc syringe. It's not a procedure that I have done, but some people like to do it. If there's any nitinol material as part of the repair, as part of the endo portion, there's a suggestion that if you pour ice over the nitinol, it will shrink it. This is how you do the recapturing the device with a 20cc syringe. Again, this isn't something that I have done personally, but I've gone to more of the wire cutter technique. Again, there's the approach what seems to be now, and the one that we've gotten into, is the hybrid repair. So leave any well-incorporated portion of the endograft in place, either proximally or distally. This is a simple cartoon showing if the iliac limbs are good, leave them. If the proximal seal is good, you can use that as well. Wherever you're sewing to grafts, I would definitely suggest using felt all around it. Reinforce this with felt as much as possible. And incorporate the aorta. If you do leave the proximal seal, if possible, incorporate the aorta with felt into the repair. This is a couple of cases where we can show where we did this hybrid. This is a type 1 endoleak where the patient developed a suprarenal aneurysm, so that the aorta, the stent graft at this point was just kind of floating in the aneurysm. And the patient also had visceral disease, which is not important, but we did take out a lot of the graft. Here's the reconstruction of the graft, and we left the iliac limbs of the graft, sewed a multi-branched graft proximally, and then left the iliac limbs and sewed to that. Here's one with a type 3 endoleak where there had been component separation on the left side leading to a left limb occlusion, as well as a massive abdominal aneurysm and iliac aneurysm. Again, the proximal seal was good. So we had gone in, there was such massive iliac aneurysms, we wanted to put ureteral stents in. The urologist couldn't even get the stents to pass through here because of the size of the aneurysm. But we did retain the proximal part, and as you can see, that we've used felt strips all around the repair and then brought one to the distal to the common iliac on one side, and then the side that had the graft occlusion went down to the common femoral on the other side. This is what it looked like post-op. I would say that if we look at the results of this, the mortality is significant. The mortality for explanting an infected graft in all series is greater than 35%, and if it's associated with a fistula, it's very high. It's probably the highest, even higher than ruptured aneurysm. The mortality with a rupture when an endograft is in place and there's an associated rupture, again, greater than 50%. Elective explant, for the most part, it is reported somewhere between 3 and 15% mortality, but it's probably around 10%. The most benign problem that you operate on is sac enlargement with either a type 2 or sac enlargement with no endoleak. And that mortality probably is just approaching open repair. So the conclusions are really that EVAR is a EVAR explant is technically challenging, carrying a high mortality rate. It's most common in type 1 endoleaks, which implies complex neck anatomy and pushing the limits of the device IFU. Rupture and infection carry a very high mortality. Thank you.
You've been listening to a podcast by University of California Television. For more information about this program or UCTV, visit us online at uctv.tv.